You can't do better if you're going to address a crowd with human shields than Henrik and Daniel in the city of Vancouver, can you?
No, but it's, you know, this is not picking on Vancouver because they do it everywhere, but it's just ignorant. The treatment of the commissioner is simply ignorant, and I just don't get it. The people have to understand the commissioner awards the draft. The reason the draft was in Vancouver is because Gary Bettman awarded it to Vancouver. So I just don't get it. But, yeah, it was cool to see the Twins up there.
Let me ask, has he embraced it a little? Because he stepped up to the mic, and I laughed out loud, and I don't do that very often and by myself in front of the television. But he announced a trade, and he's like, oh, now you like me. Like, Roger Goodell gets it. It does feel like Adam Silver doesn't in the NBA. But what can you do, right? Like, we all deal with criticism, and you got to shrug your shoulders sometimes. But you're right. It was pretty overwhelming in some arenas more than others.
Yeah, it's. I'll stand by my initial comment. It's ignorant, but it's become part of the draft. It's become a fixture, and people think it's cool and funny. So we're stuck with it, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know how people feel about this Mitch Marner fiasco. At least that's what it seems like it's shaping up to be. How do you feel about him essentially shopping for offer sheets, it seems? Definitely unprecedented for me. I don't know if you've heard of anything like this happening behind the scenes, and maybe this is the first time we've heard it publicly, but this is turning into a little bit of a debacle.
Well, I guess, Ashley, I'd say it's a little early to call it a debacle,
okay.
But if I got this far, if I got to June, whatever today is, if I got this close, I would wait till July 1st. I wouldn't sign. And none of these guys have. And I think my understanding is that a very significant offer was made, a full 8-year term, and $10 million a year is what one of our guys told me, heard right from one of the participants. So I don't know that personally. But it was, you know, a guy on our staff that talked to the agent. And now the issue is they don't want an 8-year term. You know, Austin Matthews has the right to walk after 5 years. And this player is saying, well, if I'm going to take less money than Austin Matthews, even though I'm the leading scorer the last 2 years, I'm certainly not taking a longer term. So the notion that they're waiting till August or July 1st to see if there's an offer sheet, I'd do the same thing if I were representing this player. If it's already June 24th or whatever it is.
Yeah, there's no sense of urgency for the player and agent. So the last 5 offer sheets have been matched. Tell us what happens, because you were freshly minted Stanley Cup champion, and Edmonton notably makes an offer sheet to Dustin Penner. Do you find out from the agent? Do you get a notification from the league? How does that manifest itself privately that an organization is told that one of their players was sheeted?
Well, we got younger listeners are going to get a good kick out of this. We got a fax from the NHL. We got a fax. That's how old I am. I have a fax machine here at the house, too, which my kids think is hilarious. And I still use it, by the way.
Stop. Who faxes you?
Can we give that number out to the listeners?
No.
Okay.
But I got a fax. And I was annoyed because I was in Penticton with my family on holiday, and Kevin Lowe was there. And I was annoyed that he didn't pick up the phone and call me. But you get a fax from the league. So then you've got 7 days to match, I believe it is, or take the draft pick. So I don't, the reason there aren't more offer sheets, people think it's because it's collusion or there's an unwritten rule among the GMs, and that's not true. The reason there are not more offer sheets is because teams match them, and you're just driving up the price of poker for a competitor. There's no reason to do it unless you think you're going to get the player. I do believe we will see at least one offer sheet this summer. I do not think it will be for Mitch Marner. And, you know, I think what Ashley says, the Marner thing isn't going very well, but the Leafs had a good weekend. They did a good job this weekend moving Marlowe. I like their draft pick. They're getting closer on 2 guys. So I think if you give grades out at the draft, I think the Leafs would get a good grade, a high grade.
Not to be overly self-reflective, but I consider your line that seeing the job Kevin's done, we assume they'll be good picks and we'll take them. I think that's a top 5 Brian Burke line. Do you have that in that neighborhood? That's a well thought out. It was great in front of the cameras. It still gets played.
Yeah, I like that one.
It was true.
A few they still play, but that one was pretty good.
So we're talking about Mitch Marner waiting this out, the Leafs waiting this out. It's already June 24th. What's the rush at this point? But what do you think the Mitch Marner result will have? What impact will it have on the other RFAs that are waiting in the wings? Like, are they waiting for this Marner deal to get played out so they can look at his contract as a comparable? Or do you think this is an outlier and it won't necessarily affect what, say, a Braden Point is making?
Well, you can say a contract's an outlier, but the fact is they all have influence. They all have impact. And you can say Nylander was an outlier, but it isn't. You may say, well, we're not going that far. We're not going to pay that much. So in that respect, it is an outlier. But it has an impact on the marketplace. And I was talking at the draft. I didn't work on Saturday, but I stayed over and stayed on the draft floor or in the building all day from about 8:30 on until the draft ended. And I talked to a bunch of teams, talked to a bunch of GMs, talked to a bunch of scouts. And one of the top GM that has one of these top RFAs, these restricted free agents, told me that none of them are talking numbers yet. They've talked concepts. They've talked term. They've talked very generally, but not talked numbers. And it's because they're all waiting until July 1st. And like I say, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you wait another week?
We'll get to PK Subban in a second. I want to know, you maybe personally and professionally, your reaction to Corey Perry being bought out. There's a player that wins Stanley Cup in Anaheim 2 years after he wins the Memorial Cup in London. Folks around here saw him play a lot, and he was so instantly impactful as a pro. Sometimes the player sees the writing on the wall. Maybe we see this with the Patrick Marleau case a little bit, but Corey, that's an awfully difficult conversation to have. That must be a difficult thing to accept for a 34-year-old player that might think he still has, he's not 40, he's 34, and might think he has a lot left to give with the only team he's ever known.
I know Bob Murray told me it was one of the worst weeks he's had in his whole career, mm-hmm. having to tell Corey Perry they were buying him out. Now, Brian Murray drafted Corey Perry. I wish I could take credit for drafting Corey, but I didn't. I inherited him, and he was on our Cup team, and he was an integral part of the teams when I was there. He was a really good hockey player. He was mean. He's bigger than you think because he's kind of slippery, but he's 6'2". He's a big man, and there's just too many miles on that odometer. He's played too hard and been hurt too often, so the buyout makes sense for the team. I don't think Corey Perry is done. I think he's going to play again. But this economic decision by the Ducks to get him off the books at that number makes perfect sense to me.
And Nashville doing some work to get PK Subban's contract off their books. They deal him to the New Jersey Devils, and they don't retain a cent of his $9 million salary. And we were talking a little bit about PK Subban as a whole. He's getting a little bit older. And then additionally, there is a little bit of a dark cloud surrounding him because a lot of people are saying his outgoing nature is not something that a lot of teams, or at least some teams, want to deal with because it's a lot of attention. And sometimes it's not conducive to the way that organizations want to run things. But my question to you is there less room for his outgoing personality as he starts to decline? Like, do you think players have to kind of temper their behavior based on their production? Because we do give more leeway to stars in any league if they're producing.
Exactly. PK is a good kid, and you won't find anyone who says anything different, but he wears on teammates. Because it is the PK brand, and he wears on teammates, and he wears out his welcome with teammates. And so he's on his third team already, and which is unusual for a player of his caliber. He's a really good hockey player, and he's a big guy, and he can shoot the puck. So, but you're right. The amount of tolerance that players and teammates will have or organizations will have for a guy is much higher with a star player than as his impact fades. So as he gets, and he's still got plenty of good hockey left, but what you said, Ashley, is true. A lot of teams probably wanted nothing to do with him, forget the salary, because it's the PK brand. You saw the video he left for the Nashville fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, here I come or here I'm coming, whatever, to New Jersey. And, you know, if you're a teammate in Nashville, you're probably saying, that, thank God that's the last one we have to watch. So, but he is a good kid. It's a great family. The family's wonderful.
Absolutely.
And he wears on people because it's all about PK.
back to Anaheim for a sec. The last coaching vacancy filled by Dallas Eakins. This is a gentleman you know well and successfully brought him in to be head coach of the Marlies. I always felt like, and you can clarify or not, that if Randy Carlyle wasn't interested in replacing Ron Wilson, maybe Dallas would have been the next coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He gets the job in Edmonton, but I love the story of perseverance. He goes out to San Diego, did a great job for Bob Murray and Dave Nonis out there, and waited. It's something we all have to do sometimes. We got to wait it out, and the clouds move, and he's an NHL head coach once again, deservedly so.
I think Dallas Eakins is a great young coach. He did a great job for us here. He's very bright. He's very innovative. And I don't, people say he failed miserably in Edmonton. I'm not sure. I think he needed to have a lion tamer for that situation. I think the so many bad habits had already crept into him there that I'm not sure that's a hill that very many coaches could climb. And when you're a rookie coach, you probably don't want to be a rookie coach in Canada. And that's why Dallas Eakins was never really a serious candidate for the Leafs job, even if Ronnie Wilson had stayed on or Randy hadn't come, because I don't think you can put training wheels on a bike in Canada. I don't think you can do that to a coach. So to me, this is a great setup for him. I think he's an excellent coach. I think he's going to do a great job for the Ducks, and I'm not surprised at all.
I mean, you'd concur. There's just great situations and sometimes not great situations. I always think of Scotty Bowman, Brian. There he's in Buffalo for 6 years. Some really nice players, but he won 3 playoff rounds in 6 years. And then is fired in the 7th year. That'll get almost anyone fired in any market, in an internet era or not. You're going to face criticism if you don't deliver results.
Well, and the math's getting harder. There's 32 teams as of a year from now. Yeah. So it means 16 teams get in, exactly half, which, by the way, I support. I don't think we should increase the number of teams, but the math's getting harder. Now, I remember saying to Henry Samueli after we won the Cup, I said, congratulations, you're due for another one in 30 years.
Did you ask for a 30-year extension right after those comments, or no?
No. No.
Okay, so when a coach doesn't work out in a certain city or situation, how likely are they to, and at least in your experience, how likely are they to kind of look at themselves and reflect and say, hey, maybe I need to adjust my brand of coaching. Hey, maybe I need to adjust the input that I allow players to have in our style or in our systems, or in, by and large, our head coaches in the NHL kind of set in their ways and like, this is how I do things, and hopefully I can find a team that aligns with me.
Well, if you're a smart person, you do that every time you have a setback. I mean, every time I've switched jobs, I mean, my contract wasn't renewed in Vancouver, and I was fired out right here. Both times, you sit back and take stock, if you're smart. If you're not smart, and you just say, oh I got screwed, then you're never going to, you know, never repair or correct any of the reasons you got fired in the first place. So I think if you have a positive IQ at all, every time you have a setback, your team's like the year before I came here, we got eliminated in the first round of Dallas. That was the year after we won the Cup. We weren't ready for them, and we were too smug. And so, right away, we had a meeting, an organizational meeting, 2 days after we were eliminated. All right, what went wrong? How did we get off the tracks here? So, I think you reevaluate and reassess every time you have a setback, not just when you have a major career setback like that, but then for sure you have to do it.